Welcome to this episode of the Bees and Honey podcast, where I speak to Polish artist Marcin Dudek, who's based in Brussels. He has a current exhibition at Harlan Levy Projects. I hope if you're in Brussels, you go see it. For me, this was an amazing episode because all of this stuff is so new to me. I hope some of it is new to you and that you really get to see another aspect of the artwork and another aspect of the artist. Enjoy. Good morning, Marcin.
Hello, good afternoon. Yeah, how are you?
Good. So please pronounce your name for me because, you know, my Polish is non-existent.
Don't worry. It's Marcin.
Marcin. Okay.
Yes, Marcin. Yes, perfect. I mean, it's like Martin, but it's a Polish, is Marcin.
Okay, good to know. So, perfect. I mean, I want to just know a little bit about your history because it's definitely not the normal course for art. Can you tell me when you started thinking of yourself as an artist and when you would, how you would transform this violent subculture of soccer fans that you were part of into art?
It's really hard to distinguish right moment in time. It was more like a transformation that took time from from the moment when I was still active, very much active in the subculture, and I think there was gradually more involved. There was more violence, kind of increasing in the circle. And I think this almost like switch into a sort of trying to survive, you know, and finding alternative out of it. And I think art was somehow always there. You know, I remember when I was very young, I was doing lots of kind of drawing, and I on the stadium I also was doing lots of painting of flags and being responsible for this kind of choreography, you know, on the visual aspect of the stadium. So I think the art was always present. My brother was also doing tattoos, you know, at home, yeah, for some people, and so mm-hmm. I think it was somehow very close with me, but I think it was. I don't come from a family with artistic roots, so there was obviously hard to come into it. You know, it was somehow deep in, you know, inside it.
Right, and you have one brother, right?
No, I have two brothers and two sisters, so okay. We are five in total. Mm-hmm. So it was quite
big family. And where did you fit in with the five kids?
Pardon, could you repeat this?
Were you the first, the second, the third?
I was the youngest. Yeah, so I was being baby. In a way the protected one, but also just was the it was kind of interesting, you know, dynamism inside the family. So we grew up in a very small apartment. It was 40 square meter flat inside the projects. Mm-hmm. So it was family of seven. So it was quite crowded, but mm-hmm. Somehow it creates quite a bond between us. You know, it was interesting. You can say now.
Yes, and as a sports fan for FC Cracovia, all of the imagery of sports and stadiums, they feature a lot in your performance, the sculpture and collage. Can you describe your most powerful or memorable performance?
I think the most powerful, probably it was the reality before I became artist. That was probably the most striking moment when I was really part of the group, you know, when I do performance for art audience, this is it's almost like recreation. It's almost like reenacting certain moments that I experienced in the past. Mm-hmm. So I think it's very hard to distinguish like what was the most like powerful moment.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in the last years I did performance in 2017. I did performance outside. It was a part of the exhibition for Museum in Poland, mm-hmm. and I did and I asked if I could perform outside the gallery, so outside the protected zone of art.
Mm-hmm.
So I did like kind of ABC exercising riot behavior
mm-hmm.
outside the museum, and it was interesting because authority reacted very fast, and I was literally pulled down to ground just like in 12 seconds. So the police wow. arrived, and I was really already on the floor, and so it was quite interesting to experience like this kind of to be general like outside comfort zone, you know, of art. So it was I think this was the moment when I was really close to the moment of my participation in the subculture in the 90s. So I think that was quite interesting.
And I mean, this whole subject matter of male violence or brutality, mob violence, you know, with all the stadium massacres and stuff that are part of your work, how would you say that your work responds to the argument of this sort of toxic masculinity in society? I mean,
yeah, I think this is it's a very interesting subject, because at the same time, I think the whole masculinity is sort of like in the way is like almost a method to hide vulnerability, you know, like I think the image of being strong and somehow, you know, like immortal is the way to, I believe is the way to really like hide like increase the confidence, you know. Yeah, if to say, you know, I grew up in very vulnerable like environment. There was a, you know, like economical neglect, and you know, the only way to like in a way manifest your strength was through a group, through a, you know, like when you like as a young man, you totally excluded from all sorts of privileges, you know, like you look for extremity, and the extremity become violent, stadium riots, you know, that becomes your like almost way of existence, way of showing your, you know, like that you're part of the world, you know, like manifesting almost your identity. So I think this idea of like this, yeah, I'm very suspicious to this you know, like an image of a strong male, you know, and
yeah.
It's something very, very, yeah.
Yes,
on the other hand, yeah, that's, yeah.
No, I can see how that would be the case, yes, the covering up of vulnerability. Go ahead.
No, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to go to the next question, but if you have something else to add, I'm more than happy to hear it.
There's lots of we could really talk about it very, very long, but I think it's quite you know, like it's a lots of individual points to it, and I think each person experiences differently, you know, like in the urge, and I think it's hard to talk about this as a kind of general phenomenon. It's a very personal point of view, you know. So yeah, I think I can conclude with it.
Well, one Belgian collector said to me a few years ago, and I hadn't really thought about it in that context, but he's really an active collector, and he goes, you know, all around the world, all through society, searching art. I really admire his method of collecting, even if I don't understand everything he collects. He said the hardest thing to sell right now is a heterosexual white male artist, and I would put you in that category.
Yeah, no, I know this is I cannot hide, you know, like in the crowd. Yeah, I understand this is obviously like it's something but on the other hand, you know, like I feel like I never thought about like this categorization. Maybe, you know, like maybe because I'm, you know, like white and you know, like, and it's, everything seems like kind of natural. But at the same time, you know, like I come from like a second. Poland was always considered as a kind of second category country in Europe, and for example, like in Belgium, there's always a stereotype of Polish cleaning lady or Polish constructor, you know. So there's a strong cliche, and you know, like, and I think yeah, it's I always feel I felt a little bit vulnerable in this aspect, but yeah, but it's hard to, you know, it's hard to establish like a point of I think yeah, like white, you know, a male artist. I mean, this is something quite, I don't know. I always felt like I'm talking about my life, about my experience, about my, you know, like a youth, a journey. And this is something universal. This is something very authentic, I think, you know, like this transmit the real experience of millions of young people, you know, like from neglected parts of society. And I think that's authentic, and I think this transmit, you know, like in my work, I hope so, you know, like, and I think this was the something that maybe opens up this conversation with other people.
Yes, I think that's why your work is appealing, because it has that otherness about it, like you said, the neglected parts of society.
Yeah, it's a yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's always like of course now, you know, like it's life is looks a little bit better, you know, and yeah, there's much more like accessibility and but back then in the 90s, I mean, everything was really, you know, I'm a generation that comes with from like transitional generation between communism and capitalism. So yeah, like I have experience of poverty, quite extreme poverty, and state abuse, you know, like in the way. So yeah, I felt always like I was somehow left, you know, behind to figure out my own way in life. So it's yeah. I never felt like in any way privileged, you know, like in that's because of my color of my skin or I think yeah, that's what the
yes. And then let's get to the orange jacket, which, you know, I call it the orange jacket, but it's the black jacket that's turned inside out to reveal the orange inside. Tell us about this color. It runs throughout your work, and tell us about the jacket which you guys wore as fans of FC Cracovia.
It was quite a widespread phenomenon, the orange jacket. It was really, yeah, it was very popular also in the other Eastern European countries, like in Romania or in Hungary, or, you know, like it was yeah, this the bomber jacket, as you know, like it's orange inside, and we wear this bomber jacket as a kind of identity clause, you know, so it becomes part of our like joint statement. And in the moment of like, so can you imagine like I'm like 12 years old, entering a stadium filled with like 50,000 people. I'm entering the stadium and I see suddenly like hundreds of thousands of people wearing this jacket inside out in orange color and almost flooding like lava over the terraces. I mean, this is a quite strong experience. So of course, I was immediately like aspiring to be part of this lava, be part of this moment in time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and I started to wear this jacket and participating in the matches in the yeah, like I fully like kind of establish my presence, you know, like I lost my identity as an individual, but I become almost like a yeah, something part of something bigger, you know, and the jacket was manifesting it, you know, like, so it was quite powerful experience.
Yes. And then this color we've seen in works on canvas. I saw some works from the Passage series, and that orange was there. Then there was orange smoke in some of your performances. and it runs throughout your work, this color, in other words.
Yeah, there's nothing attached politically to it. I think it's just a color of memory, you know, like it really stimulates the memories. When I work in collage, I feel it's almost like confront the past and it gives the impulse to authentic transmission in the work. And I use some doses of this color in my collages, mm-hmm. so it becomes present. But it's also, as we know, this color of imprisoning, color of like aggression, a signal. So there's a huge psychological aspect behind the orange color. But I think for me, it's a very personal and somehow important color in
yes, the work. Yes. And then this current exhibition, you know. Your gallerist Harlan, I mean, God bless him. He's much more philosophical. He goes into these issues much deeper than I do. But that's how he is. You know, he himself is a writer. So I feel a little bit strange asking this question. But tell me about the current exhibition in terms of how you've transformed the materials from this Bradford City Stadium fire in 1985, and also how you transformed the gym that you guys worked out in from the 1990s in the basement where your dad used to work as well, repairing shoes. Just
it's a quite personal journey. You know, I met Harlan in 2012, and we become very close friends, and we start to talk. And I think, you know, I open up my past to him, you know, through this conversation, mm-hmm. and it becomes much easier to, you know, like confront the past, and somehow, like the works becomes very autobiographical, and I started digging into the materials and of course the hooliganism comes out, the aspect of the gym comes out as a part of the research. So mm-hmm. I started really like pulling all these elements out, and for the exhibition, the exhibition is like actually two part, Slash and Burn One, and mm-hmm. which already finished. It was opened in September 2020. Mm-hmm. And the other part is currently on view in other gallery in Molenbeek. So mm-hmm. the first part was very like mixed with material from recreate. Like the first piece was the accumulator was recreating a gym in the basement that I constructed with my friends in the 90s. Mm-hmm. So it was like a one-to-one replica, and it becomes almost like a kind of memory box inside the space. Mm-hmm. And this space was kind of very important for me because it was like first like used as a workshop for my father to repair the shoe, which becomes kind of tragic because there was not ventilated part of this room. So he died unfortunately on cancer. By this, and so like after his death, mm-hmm. yeah, like I transformed the space gradually to like activity, like a gym that we could meet with the friends and just, you know, like praxis and train the body and get, you know, like into a ready for like a so-called confrontation outside the on the streets. So it was mm-hmm. It was a club, you know, like it was a space that we could meet because there was not at that time there was nothing for use, you know, there was not like clubs or meeting points, so everything was clandestine, mm-hmm. organized. Mm-hmm. So I felt like I want to really recreate this space from all the artifacts and the other work in the first part exhibition was like a Slash and Burn collage, which was based on the Bradford disaster of 1985. Mm-hmm. I was mm-hmm. like, for some years I'm tracking a history of a stadium disaster, like looking at Stampede, looking at the crowd crash, kind of inspired, you know, like on my own memories of being inside the crowd. So this is all like a long ongoing research and investigation into the crowd violence. And the second, the exhibition, the current exhibition is something of a large installation that I started constructing 2 years ago. Out of hundreds of jackets, used jackets, like sport bomber jacket, like jerseys, different textiles, like neglected textiles that were sent to Poland as a kind of trash to be recycled. So I bring them back to the West, I collect them in Poland, and bring them back to Belgium, where they belong originally. So it is for me like the history of material, you know, like a history of used piece that is just like being reinvented and put into new context, into like a large jacket that becomes almost like a cathedral of neglect and a cathedral of human energy, you know. So it's you can basically walk inside the sleeve and be like in the large tent, you know, almost. Yeah. So yeah, that's
wow. I'm sorry I'm not seeing this exhibition now. It really, I mean, I saw the pictures, but I think feeling it and being there would be an experience of itself too.
It was quite a hard labor, and we have help of like organization that work with refugees to sew all the jacket together. So it was a social project. So somehow it kind of expanded into almost like a group of working together on this piece. So
yes. Yeah. Well, you know, I heard from Harlan as well that your work has been paired in collections with young contemporary artists like Rashid Johnson and Mark Bradford. Do you see that there might be a correlation between your works? I mean, for me, I see it coming from the non-traditional source, the soccer, the fan, the hooligans, and also the point of view of people who have been, like you said, neglected or marginalized. What do you think?
Yeah, it's quite interesting because I come across, for example, work of Mark Bradford through Harlan, actually, or through people that collect art. So I never actually reflect on it before. And I was quite surprised that there's someone in common points there. Like I recently bought a book of Mark Bradford, and I discovered that his mom was like a beauty salon, you know, like and my sister has a like hairdresser salon for 30 years, like next in the basement next to my gym. So it's like all these references that comes across is quite surprising. But I think, there's lots of elements of, like, I think the labor aspect, you know, the intensity of labor is there, you know, like, come from a working class family. So the, like, the aspect of work and confronting the, like, something durational was very important. So I think there's this aspect there as well, you know, in the work. But, yeah. But it's a nice surprise, I have to say.
Yes. Well, talking about the aspect of work, you have two studios in Brussels. Do they serve different functions?
Yeah, like when it comes to like work division, I'm quite, I like to divide it quite to almost like create the capsules, different capsule for different purpose. I think this is almost like like first, I have one studio that is serves just work. It's almost just for collage work. So I'm constructing a very hermetic environment for this kind of work, and the other studio is more of sort of like anarchic, a bit wild space where I work with metal and sculptures and try to really like let go the matter over the work. I think this is, I like the also contrast between like the organized and chaos kind of environments, and I think this two studio giving me almost like this like opposite points where the energy is actually created. So I think that was always my dream to have two studios, and finally I think I can somehow, you know, like materialize this in the work. Yeah.
Nice. And then your wife is an artist too, I found out. Does your work influence her, and does her work influence you? Can you see any?
I think so, subconsciously for sure. Yeah, like I mean, we're sharing one of the studios together. Mm-hmm. She's just above me,
mm-hmm.
so I think there's I think there's a strong influence there. But I will not talk like more deeper into the connection. But I think there's like I will let people discover maybe, you know, like the connection themselves.
Right. And then
yeah.
I heard that you have an upcoming performance in Paris. When is that, and what is it? Can you talk about it?
Yes, this is something that really make my nights a little bit sleepless. Yeah, but it's something very challenging, and I think I would like to take the big jacket from the Harlem installation and create like a street theater with
Mm-hmm.
like a youth from the suburbs of Paris. So this is almost like the jacket becomes almost like a conversation, like a dialogue between, you know, like between people, and I would like to create almost like kind of simple gesture, like raise the jacket into victory kind of shape, raise the arms, and kind of bring this to center of Paris, like, and so the performance we plan to do it, you know, like just in the front of Centre Pompidou on the square. So hopefully it will go ahead. We're still like asking all the, it's still in early stage, so it's nothing guaranteed. But
Yes.
yeah, the idea is to like highlight, you know, like elements of which are some kind of left in the outside the spotlights, you know. So the jacket will be the like the big embassy for a place to meet, basically. Yeah.
Perfect. A very, very cool idea. I mean, I'll go and ask one more question. You know, in 2017, when you had the museum exhibition in Poland, how is the art scene there in general? I mean, you moved in 2012 to Brussels, so I guess you have a better connection to Brussels now in terms of art. But can you tell me a little bit about the scene in Poland with artists and art?
I think it's quite interesting. It's quite homogeneous. Like I mean, it's very insider space. I think I feel a little bit I'm like kind of outsider-ish because I have my education outside Poland also. And but I think it's quite vibrant, you know, when it comes to, you know, like to young artists, and there's an incredible amount of energy coming out, you know, from like every generation. And I say, yeah, I'm always very much, you know, like looking at what's happening there. I think this is important for me to be conscious about all the new waves coming. So I think but I'm not really day to day anymore in Poland, so
yes.
It's hard to create like a opinion on it. Yeah.
Right. Well, is there anything you wanted to add that I didn't ask you?
No, I think I would like to thank you for your question. I think it's always very hard to talk about the subject because it's really, you know, like I always need to somehow move my personal life into it, and so sometimes, you know, it feels like I'm exhausted really after talking. So I think but it's also a pleasure, you know, to talk. You know, I mean, I'm not forced to do this. I do this with pleasure. But as I say, you know, it's something very emotional. So yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing, and I really I will get back to Harlan, because now that I have a much better idea about what exactly is going on with your work, I really appreciate it a lot. So thank you for taking this time to share of yourself.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your time and question. Have a good day. Bye.
Take care. Bye. I hope you enjoy this episode with Marcin Dudek. For me, it was really amazing to speak to the artist and to learn about what exactly has propelled this work, as it was really quite foreign to me. Hopefully, if you're in Brussels, you get a chance to see the exhibition at Harlan Levy Projects. Have a great week, and thanks for joining this episode of the Bees and Honey podcast.